College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast, coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Wants you to subscribe to us on iTunes. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing you each and every week. And also check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook and send me your questions on Twitter. I'll get to them later in the show. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. Later in this show, I will be joined by ESPN's Fran Fraschilla, a good friend of the podcast, who was in Chicago last week for the NBA Draft Combine. So we will break down the NBA draft for the year 2016 from soup to nuts. And have you checked Casper.com yet? Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by offering obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. A Casper mattress provides resilience and long-lasting support of comfort. Casper's mattress is one of a kind. It has just the right sink and just the right bounce. Two technologies, a hybrid of latex foam and memory foam. Check this out. Buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. Plus, Casper offers free delivery and returns within a 100-day period. It's that simple. Because statistically, lying on a bed for 4 minutes in a showroom has no correlation to whether it's the right bed for you. That's why Casper has turned the buying process into a risk-free experience. Casper understands the importance of truly trying out a mattress that in all reality you spend a third of your life on. Listen to these prices. $500 for a twin-size mattress and $950 for a king-size mattress. Comparing that to industry averages, that's an outstanding price point. You can get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com and using my code HOOPS in all capitals. That's www.casper.com, and be sure to enter the College Hoops Today podcast promo code HOOPS. Terms and conditions apply. So, as I mentioned, we are going to have ESPN's Fran Fraschilla on in just a couple minutes to talk about the NBA draft and the NBA draft combine last week in Chicago. And my thing is this, and look, I have been pretty outspoken about a lot of things in regards to the NBA draft and the new draft rules. Look, I understand that it is a benefit for the student athlete to be able to enter the NBA draft without an agent and have the option of whether or not returning to college. But one thing that I really started to think about last week, and it really hit me when I was watching the draft combine on TV, why all of a sudden do we put so much stock in what happens over a couple day period in Chicago during pseudo pickup games and individual drills, which are done one against none in terms of evaluating a prospect for the next level? Why does that usurp? Why does that overshadow, okay, what these players do in game action? Because let's face it right now, we can look at all sorts of different things in terms of reach, in terms of athleticism, in terms of vertical jump, and I get that they're important. But to me, to have the best gauge of what a player was going to do at the next level, you would want to be sure that that player in game action, when there is scouting, when there are schemes on defense and offense on both sides of the ball, you would want to make sure that that player could produce and produce at a high and consistent level for a very long period of time. One of the reasons why we saw certain players, in my opinion, flourish during the NBA draft combine, because there were no plays, because it was like an AAU game. Sheck Diallo, who again I have seen since he's been in 10th grade, the kid from Kansas, who again was a highly touted kid coming into college, MVP of the Nike Hoop Summit, MVP of the McDonald's All-America game, but could not get into a regular role at Kansas, played exceptionally well at the NBA draft combine because it was about running, it was about jumping, it was about playing off instincts. That does not always translate in a basketball game, and we saw that this past year at Kansas. A guy who didn't play well at the NBA draft combine is a guy like Nigel Hayes from Wisconsin. Look, I have felt all along that Nigel Hayes should go back to college, but you are not going to get the best out of Nigel Hayes or certain players who need to have an impact within a structured system during the NBA draft combine. So I am really curious why sometimes so many people are wowed, in Chicago versus looking at what happens within the landscape of a season. And look, later in this show, after we talk to Fran Fraschilla, I am going to dissect, digest, and offer some perspective on several programs and several teams in college basketball that are waiting on key draft decisions. And look, we are all counting on the one thing, and that is May 25th, because on May 25th, a week from Wednesday, we will have the opportunity to finally look ahead accurately at the next college basketball season and find out who is going to be staying, who is going to be going, and who is going to fill in what hole for what team. Because look, right now, we have seen these new draft rules, okay, in my opinion, be somewhat controlled chaos. It's been like controlled chaos with the amount of players that have decided to put their name in the 2016 NBA draft. And I have talked about it on this forum, on other forums, about how I think there needs to be something modified with these new rules, because they're definitely better for players, but the programs suffer. Coaches are handcuffed right now in terms of spring recruiting, and there's no other way around that. Now, I know that the Players Association and everybody wants to be in the best interest of the student-athlete, and it is in the best interest of the student-athlete, but there are other things that are going to be affected, and it's not just the recruiting of these programs that need to find, okay, other players to fill roster spots. But Fran Fraschilla was on the scene in Chicago. He's going to help us cover everything from soup to nuts. Fran Fraschilla coming up next. This is the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. The NBA Draft Combine was last weekend in Chicago, and somebody who was on hand to take it all in, good friend of the show, is ESPN's Fran Fraschilla, and he is on the line right now. And Fran, what is the biggest thing that you learned while you were in Chicago that maybe you didn't know prior to making the trip to the Windy City?
Well, I think the big thing, John, is the rule change the NCAA implemented, allowing guys to test themselves at the combine and team workouts was a smashing success. A number of guys helped themselves. That'll probably, you know, give them the necessary information to stay in the draft. And then of the 16 or so guys that don't have agents that, in that same mix, those guys probably will, many of those guys will head back to school, but better for it, because very similar to guys like Buddy Hield and Denzel Valentine a year ago. If you know your weaknesses on the NBA level, you can go back now and spend the next 12 months honing your skills. So I think the rule change was the biggest factor in the combine.
Fran, I get that we always want to look for the benefit of the student-athlete, and that's something that obviously has to be exercised. I'm curious, if you weren't a member of the media and you were coaching at a program that had a player who was maybe 50-50, how do you think you would look at the new rules if you were a head coach?
Well, I'd still be in favor of it, John, although take Ben Bentel, for example, of Providence. He's the poster boy right now for going to the combine and impressing teams, and yet at the same time doesn't have an agent, and everybody associated with Providence College would love to have him come back. Mm-hmm. I think as a coach, I still think it's a good rule. I think because if you lose a guy like a Ben Bentel to the NBA, it does hurt your program in the short term, and Ed Cooley will suffer a little bit for it. But, you know, for Providence to have now, if he stays, and I do believe he's a first-round pick, if he stays, it gives Providence, you know, two first-round picks with which you can go out and sell to the next few recruiting classes. It's a short-term hit, no question, to the college coach and his program. But I still think, overall, it has great benefits. And, I think it really is a good rule from that standpoint. And I would like to think that if I was a college coach, I'd feel the same way.
You know, Fran, we watch these guys all year long in game-like situations, and then it feels like we have this bubble at the combine where so much onus is put over just a 48 to 72-hour period that, let's face it, is almost like a couple of pseudo-pickup games and some one-on-none drills.
Yes.
Why do you think
Yes.
so much onus is put on the combine and maybe less onus is put on the season that was just played?
I got to be honest with you, John. It's not. And now, if you got a draft blog and I laugh when a guy's stock is rising or falling based on, let's just say, the combine. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of NBA teams have had these guys pegged in the same general spots. Let me give you an example. before the combine, I was told by three teams that Robert Carter Jr. Mm-hmm. of Maryland is a perfect early to mid-second round pick, 30 to 45. Why? Well, first of all, he's gotten himself in great shape. He lost the body fat he had at Georgia Tech. He is a big guy who can play both inside and also step away from the basket. And the major concern is his lateral quickness defensively. Mm-hmm. Given all those factors, he was already an early to mid-second round pick. But if you read the combine, you know, the postmortems after the combine, you know, everybody says Robert Carter's stock is rising. Mm-hmm. Well, to be honest, most teams had him pegged right where most of the bloggers have him pegged now. So I will tell you that teams put far more stock on the season as a whole than they do as to who played well at the combine. The only people who get excited at the combine are the NBA coaches who haven't seen guys all season. And all of a sudden, a guy may jump out at them and they'll ask their GM, hey, tell me more about A.J. English, or tell me more about Joel Bollenboy from Weber State. So that's really, in my mind, how it works.
Well, since we talked about the NBA head coaches, you know, trying to get more information from their general managers, who do you think raised the most eyebrows at the combine that maybe wasn't on the radar heading to Chicago?
Well, I think a guy like Joel Bollenboy, although honestly, NBA scouts are all aware of him. Every team saw him during the year at Weber State, but there's a guy, when you look at him in person, at 6'9", 235, very good length and athleticism, tested well athletically, and then he played well. And by the way, during the season, the most exciting thing about him to NBA teams is he averaged 13 rebounds a game, or almost 13. So, you know, you could say he helped himself at the combine because you were able to compare him to guys from power conferences. But if Joel Bollenboy wasn't at the combine, I still think there's a safe bet that he was going to go in the second round. But that's a guy, perfect example of a guy who, when you put the eyeballs on him, you think, you know, he does one thing extremely well for the NBA, and that is rebound the basketball.
ESPN's Fran Fraschilla joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein, looking ahead to the 2016 NBA draft. And, you know, Fran, I wrote about this, and I'm curious, you know, your take. You know, I'm not a huge NBA guy, but I did notice, you know, when Portland was trading blows with Golden State, the backbone of Portland's success was two guys who played at the mid-major level in the backcourt, Damian Lillard and also yep. CJ McCollum at Weber State and Lehigh. How much does the success of Portland open the eyes to general managers looking at guards at the mid-major level? Because let's face it, there was a stigma, I think, that you sometimes had to transfer up if you want to play at the next level, but Portland has kind of dispelled that.
Yeah, and I think, John, if you look around the NBA, there's so many examples of mid-major guys that are doing well. I mean, Portland was trying to contain a guy that was the ultimate mid-major guy in Steph Curry, who today might be the best player in the world.
Right.
So I have to tell you, honestly, teams are so sophisticated now in their scouting. I can remember going to see a game at North Texas State a couple of years ago where C.J. McCollum and Lehigh were playing Tony Mitchell, another guy that was slated for the first round. C.J. McCollum got hurt before the game. He didn't even play, and yet almost every NBA team was at that game. They thought they were going to get a chance to see two, you know, first-round prospects. So I will tell you that, sure, I guess if you do it at the highest level and you put great numbers up at a place like Duke or Kansas, maybe it makes – are you a little more comfortable taking a guy? But NBA scouts now, personnel people, they're so good for the most part that they can, you know, they can find guys. And, you know, Lillard and McCollum are perfect examples. Steph Curry's another. And you can go down every NBA roster and find really good mid-major guys that have become, you know, quality NBA players.
Well, let's talk about a guy who's not necessarily coming from a mid-major school, but he came from a school that wasn't in the Power Five conferences, and that's DeAndre Bembry from St. Joe's, who was a part of two teams that won an Atlantic 10 championship, and he won a game in the tournament this year.
Yep.
You know, I've been watching him for years. You have too. You know, we always fall on the crutch sometimes as analysts as, well, that guy really knows how to play, but he might illustrate that quality and attribute better than any other player in the draft. How did he help himself in Chicago?
Well, I mean, he just helped himself because he did the things he's been doing his whole career. By the way, if you ask me to rank the best passers in this draft, I would start with Ben Simmons at number one, and then it would be very close. It would be Denzel Valentine and DeAndre Bembry not far behind. Aside from the terrific athleticism and instincts and feel for the game, that guy's as good a passer as you'll find. And, you know, again, I'll go back to saying he helped himself only because, you know, every team in the league's decision makers were there and their eyeballs were on him. But as you know, and as Phil Martelli will tell you, he played many games this year with 5 to 10 NBA scouts at those games. But what you love about him is right off the bat, he's got NBA size for the two-guard position, athleticism, versatility, and this innate ability to do little things that help you win. He's going to go in the late first round, in my opinion, if not a little bit higher. And if he were a more consistent outside shooter, I think you'd probably agree that he's probably a lottery pick. Yes. So, you know, terrific college player whose skills are going to translate to the NBA. And as Phil Martelli told me, I think quite presciently, he's going to go to a playoff team more than likely. And that's exactly the type of team where his overall game and feel for the game fit perfectly.
Fran, you've spent a lot of time, obviously, studying the international game. You know, this time last year, you were ahead of the curve on Kristaps Porzingis. When you look at the international angle for the 2016 NBA draft, how would you describe it?
Well, it's very interesting. As you know, it changes from year to year, and it obviously changes based on, you know, who's in the draft. And this year is an interesting year for international guys because there could be as many as seven that go in the first round, but at least five of them will go somewhere between 18 and 30. But obviously the guy that people want to know about the most is Dragan Bender, the 7'1", still 18-year-old, who plays at Maccabi Tel Aviv, and he's from Croatia. He's been on the scene for 3 years now, and, you know, I guess the best way to describe him, he's not quite – he doesn't have the polish and game experience that Porzingis has, but he's mobile, he can play away from the basket, he moves his feet very well, which will be important defensively in pick and roll. And you're taking him somewhere between 4 and 9, knowing that the best basketball for Bender is still 2-3 years away from starting. So high commodity, but not probably going to have the impact immediately of a Porzingis who played 2 full seasons in the second best league in the world.
Let's look now at some other guys who are foreign technically, but they also are a little bit more on the radar. I want to start with Sabonis from Gonzaga, who I don't think a lot of people talked about because he was playing with Kyle Wiltshire. But, Fran, this guy to me was the epitome of efficiency. And, you know, Mark Few said to me once that he didn't understand that good was the enemy of great or shouldn't be the enemy of great. And, I mean, from a field goal percentage, you know, situation, the guy was incredibly efficient. How do you think he will rise as we get into individual workouts?
Well, again, John, forget the mock drafts for a second. By mid-January, I talked to some NBA people I trust, and all of them had him, you know, 20 or higher, meaning that he could even go in the lottery. And I was with Gonzaga at the end of the year at the WCC tournament. Mark told me maybe most favorite player he's ever coached. The guy has an incredible toughness and will to win, a tremendous desire to continue to improve. Of course, he comes from a great basketball lineage as the son of Arvydas Sabonis. And the only thing you can really, the only major knock on him at the moment is he an elite athlete? And I would just give to you Exhibit A, Rui Scola, who many of us have only seen at the tail end of his NBA career and not how good he was when he was a young player. This kid's 20 years old. I believe he'll go in the lottery. And what you can basically plug in for the next 12 years is a guy who's going to be, at the very worst, a terrific rotation player and a guy that's going to help you win games, great teammate, great feel for the game. He's going to show people that he can play away from the basket as a pick-and-pop guy, but a ferocious competitor. And, completely low maintenance. Perfect guy to take somewhere between 10 and 15.
Mm-hmm. Now, he obviously played at Gonzaga. People knew about him, and people knew about the myth of Thon Maker for a couple of years. You and I, before the Elite 24 game in New York, watched him in an open gym, and he's a bit of a mystery, but after watching him, you know, a bunch on the AAU circuit the past couple of years, it seemed to me defensively, and you know this better than me because you coach at the highest level, that he could cover up a lot of people's mistakes. When you look at Thon Maker, how much will his defense attract teams in addition to his offense?
Well, I think the defense plays is goes hand in hand with what the NBA looks for now with big guys, and that's length and athleticism and you know, the ability to protect the rim. Now, there's some characteristics that are not going to translate, and that is the body type at the moment. You know, you want to – I was probably one of the first guys when I saw him a couple of years ago to say, wow, you know, energy level, length, you know, equals Kevin Garnett. Mm-hmm. And that's probably not fair, you know, because of how great a career Kevin Garnett's had. From what I've been around him, and we had him at the Under Armour All-American Camp last year, here's what I know about him. Seems like a great kid, does have a great motor, and does have length and athleticism. Fancies himself as a guy with offensive skills, although those skills have to be tightened up. He's got to be a better shooter, better ball handler. Not necessarily a rim protector in the way, say, a Karl Towns might have been a year ago. But if you're a team, and I don't think right now, John, he's a lottery pick, but I think if you're a team looking for size and length and athleticism in the second half of the first round and beyond, he's going to give you a long look. The best thing he could do is go to teams and work out against other high-level draft pick types, prove himself, kick butt, and then his stock will rise. If he doesn't do that and they hide him out, then you're taking a gamble at a guy and on a guy, and then now you're going to be relying on other factors, and that's when I think he could slip.
ESPN's Fran Fraschilla joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Fran was front and center at the NBA Draft Combine in Chicago last week. We are getting an early peek right now at the 2016 NBA Draft. And Fran, we have seen, you know, college basketball and really the NBA shift to a smaller, more skilled type of approach, especially the NBA with the rule changes. How much will that affect the mindsets of teams that are looking at traditional post players maybe at, you know, 10 to the 15 range when they look at guys like Poeltl even further down, guys like Henry Ellenson or Steven Zimmerman, because of the rule changes? How much will those commodities, which used to be the main commodity, become somewhat obsolete?
Well, I don't think they will, John. There's no question the game has shifted to a speed and space game with being able to get up and down the floor and space the floor in the half court and shoot jump shots. But I would give you Exhibit A, B, and C as Karl Anthony Towns, Andre Drummond, and now Steven Adams in the playoffs to tell you that the big man is still not yet obsolete. So, and there's other big guys around the league, the older guys like Gasol and Zebo and others who you, Dwight Howard certainly, who you have to account for from a physical strength standpoint. So depending on how you want to build your NBA roster, a guy like a Poeltl, who right now, although he's probably a top 10 pick, I view him as a bottom half of the league starter, top half of the league rotation guy. You still need big guys. So I don't think they're not going the way of the dinosaur anytime soon. Because although the league has shifted to maybe a smaller, quicker league by necessity, I still think you need big guys. So particularly a guy like Poeltl has value. Ellenson does on the offensive end because he's so versatile. And then Steven Zimmerman, although he can't really hold his own in the low post right now, you just like the fact that he's a 7-foot kid who runs well, passes well, and has a good feel for the game. Although, you know, did not really shoot a lot of free throws this year. So the big guys are still coming in all shapes and sizes, and they still have, you know, major value for teams, you know, picking in the first round.
Well, and I also think the guys that have value are guys that are going to have the ability to get into the paint because the hand check rule has become a thing of the past. Which players that you saw at the combine do you think can be a change of pace type of guard off the bench that maybe we could see as a steal here in the late first to early second round?
Well, it's a good question. Let me just tell you that this guy's not a sleeper, but The reason I think Chris Dunn will be an all-star is for the reasons you just mentioned. At 6'4", 215 or 220, great size, great strength, ability to get to the lane. Kind of reminds me of a Marcus Smart, but actually with more quickness and more point guard acumen, you know? Mm-hmm. Marcus has made a nice adjustment to the league. But to your point, the hand check rule absolutely makes a guy, you know, like a Chris Dunn, a potential all-star someday. But, you know, it's actually a draft deep in point guards, although nobody like super outstanding after Dunn, in my opinion, but the Demetrius Jacksons, the Wade Baldwins, the Kay Felders, and yes, even Isaiah Whitehead, who I believe is going to be a first-round pick. By the way, we're talking about passers. You saw him a lot, John.
Tremendous.
As good a passer as those other guys I mentioned.
Yeah, tremendous.
And all Isaiah's got to do, in my opinion, is cut down on the tough shots he took this year for Seton Hall. But he's helped his stock, and he'll get into the lane at the NBA level, and he'll make shots. So I think that rule helps. But I have to tell you, when you think of the NBA right now, virtually every good team in the league has a scoring point guard. Mm-hmm. The Ricky Rubios are few and far between, and the Lillards, John Walls, Russell Westbrooks, Steph Currys, and on and on and on, Chris Paul, those guys have to run their team, but they still got to average 20 a night as well.
Fran, you know, the hard part probably for this new rule is, you know, you obviously have kids who want to play in the NBA, but you also have kids who could come back and be better, you know, in college. And nobody Yep. illustrated that better than your guy, Buddy Hield. How much do you think Buddy Hield, and I know that you've seen him since he was a freshman, Yep. you know, will really be a model for kids who are on the fence about coming back to school for years to come?
Well, he's only a model if you put the work in that guy. And I would throw Denzel Valentine into this mix. I've talked to Tom Izzo about this. The greatest thing about this process right now is find out what your weakness is or weaknesses, and go back and improve. And one of the things NBA teams told Buddy Hield a year ago is you got to be able to create your own shot a little bit better and handle the ball a little bit better. And watching him improve, John, that's exactly what he did. His footwork now is impeccable. And if you look at Denzel Valentine, he shot 28% as a freshman, ended up shooting 44 from three as a senior. And so they're only a model if they go back and truly put the time in, the 3, 4, 5 hours a day it takes to improve your game. Otherwise, it's all talk and no action. And, you know, guys won't improve. That's just that's the way life works, to be honest.
All right, let's do some quick hitters right now. I'm going to go through some other Big 12 guys who I think are intriguing. You know, maybe not on the cusp of everybody's tongue, but I'm going to say their name, and you let me know quickly what you think of their prospects. Torian Prince from Baylor.
Solid, late first, early second, can play multiple positions, shoot the ball pretty well. Tough, strong. Good rotation guy in time for an NBA team.
Oklahoma's Isaiah Cousins.
First year he played point guard was this year. He's got NBA size at the point. He shoots it really well. Ball handling's got to improve a little bit. Could see him being a second-round pick. Could even see him play a D-League level for a couple of years. Think he'll make the NBA in time.
And last one from the Big 12, the guy who has the motor but didn't have the playing time this past year from Kansas, Sheck Diallo.
He picked a great agent. Bill Duffy's going to get him drafted in the first round, there's no doubt. I worry about him being 218 pounds, trying to play inside in the NBA. He's a project. That's not necessarily a criticism. It's just a fact. If I were Diallo, I would hope to have a Clint Capella of the Houston Rockets start to my career. Not sure it's possible, but Bill Duffy will get him drafted in the first round.
Fran, I want to do some quick hits, and then we'll let you go on some guys that are probably 50-50 or so without an agent. Your thoughts right now based on whether or not these guys will come back to school. Josh Hart.
Going back to school, Villanova will be top five.
A guy who you also coached a couple of years ago, Malik Newman.
Actually played pretty good day two. Needs to go back to Mississippi State. He had an injured freshman year. He played on a team where he wasn't featured as much, I would go back to school and average 18 a game and show everybody the player I was in high school.
The Big Ten's version of Inspector Gadget, Troy Williams.
Tough call. Indiana's loaded next year. They don't necessarily need him back. I think he's going to stay in the draft. He's got some things to work on. Could be a second-round pick or undrafted. Will be on an NBA roster in the summer. And I think he'll be in the D-League working on some things he needs to work on, like shooting, and maybe someday we'll see him in the NBA.
And this is the final one, and this guy's my sleeper because nobody watched Clemson last year, but he can shoot,
yep,
and he's an athlete. Jerron Blossom game.
Tough call for the young man. Has his degree. Of course, he broke his foot, broke his leg in high school, so he redshirted his freshman year. So he's an old junior. He's a 50-50 guy. I think a team could pull the trigger on him in the second round. And I could see him making a roster. He's kind of a poor man's Justice Winslow, not quite athletic, better offensively. I don't know if he thinks there's that much more to prove if he goes back to Clemson. He's a tough, tough call. It's going to depend on his NBA workouts and whether someone gives him some sort of promise that they'll take him in the late first, but more likely the second round.
Frank, could talk to you for hours. Sometimes I have. We'll catch up again before the draft. Thanks for a couple minutes.
Always a pleasure, John.
We'd like to thank ESPN's Fran Fraschilla for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. And again, we want you to subscribe to us on iTunes and also check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook and give us a like. Right now, we're going to take it to Twitter to answer some of your questions. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. The first question is from Gabe Burkhart, and it's John, where does ISU, and he means Iowa State's backcourt, rank in the nation? Look, it's one of the best, in my opinion. Monty Morris, Naz Long, Matt Thomas. A very potent perimeter. I think it's a perimeter that's going to give Iowa State a chance to be an NCAA tournament team in year two under Steve Prohm. The big question, though, for the Cyclones, what are they going to do up front without Niang and Jameel McKay? Obviously, Deontay Burton will have a major, major role. Our next question is going to be from Jay Gatsby, and it's John. How do you feel about the ACC next year? Will UVA's new class master the system fast enough to contribute? And look, it's a two-part question. Obviously, the ACC has proven over the last 2 years that it's the best conference in college basketball. I think when you look at Virginia's recruiting class, you have to love Austin Nichols as an all-conference player, the transfer from Memphis. And also remember this name, Kyle Guy, a crafty combo guard. Saw him in high school. Love him. I think he'll be a big piece to Tony Bennett's puzzle. Now, right now, I'm going to go through several teams, and we talked about this at nauseam with Fran Fraschilla, that are going to be waiting on key draft decisions up until May 25th. Teams in college basketball that will be severely affected by a decision of a player who is waiting on their status for the 2016 NBA draft. We start with Syracuse, and look, the worst kept secret right now in college basketball circus is that Malachi Richardson is going to stay in the 2016 NBA draft. What does that mean for the Orange? That means that Syracuse, and I wrote about this in my column on Monday for CBSSports.com, Syracuse will have a perimeter next year of John Gillen, who is an immediately eligible transfer from Colorado State, averaged 13 points a game, Franklin Howard, who made just 2 3-point shots in total last season, averaged 1.6 points a game, and Tyus Battle, a freshman. That is not a lot of seasoning on the perimeter for Jim Boeheim and company. Seton Hall, obviously waiting on Isaiah Whitehead. Everything I'm hearing, it is unlikely he will return to South Orange. Seton Hall would have been a top 15 team nationally with Isaiah Whitehead. Without him, they are going to probably be a top 40 team, in my opinion. You'll see Kansas State transfer Javon Thomas have a big role for the Pirates in 16-17. Providence waiting on Ben Bentel. For me, this is real simple. If Ben Bentel returns to Providence, Providence will be a team, I think, that can make the NCAA tournament for the fourth straight year under Ed Cooley. If not, it is straight rebuild in Friartown. Mississippi State is waiting on Malik Newman. Look, Malik Newman has had a one-and-done type
mantra since he went to Mississippi State. He did not have a great freshman season. I think a preseason toe injury really had a big reason to do with his struggles offensively last year. He did not shoot high percentages either from the field or from three-point range. Mississippi State with Malik Newman has a solid perimeter in place with him, IJ Reddy, and Quindari Weatherspoon. If Malik Newman does go pro, look for Eli Wright, a freshman from Owensboro, Kentucky, to potentially start at shooting guard for the Bulldogs. The national champion Villanova Wildcats are waiting on Josh Hart to make a decision. Josh Hart, obviously, a key cog in the national title run. One thing I'm looking at with Villanova is this with the Josh Hart the situation. If Josh Hart comes back, Villanova, to me, is the top challenger to Duke in terms of winning a national championship. If he doesn't, Villanova will still be competitive, but they are going to be missing a key piece on the perimeter in terms of its his offensive potential. Memphis, another team to keep an eye on. They are waiting on Dedrick Lawson, who averaged 15 points and 10 rebounds as a freshman. Tubby Smith's team cannot compete for an NCAA tournament berth next year in his first year at Memphis without Dedrick Lawson. I think he will stay in school. Louisville is waiting on Chinonu Onuwaku. That is another decision that we expect will come down to the wire. Onuwaku, 9.9 points, 8.5 rebounds last year as a sophomore. It's going to be hit or miss right there. I don't think it's anything real clear cut for Onuwaku in terms of whether or not he's going to stay in the draft. Mango Mathiang will be back in the pivot, but Louisville needs Chinonu Onuwaku, in my opinion, to be a top third team in the ACC next year. Indiana's waiting on Troy Williams, and this is the decision, in my opinion, that a team can absorb, because if Troy Williams comes back to Indiana, he's a Big Ten Player of the Year candidate. If he doesn't, OG Anunoby, who everybody loved last year as a freshman, will probably inherit Williams' place in the starting lineup. Purdue and Caleb Swanigan, look, Purdue, to me, is a top four team in the Big Ten if Caleb Swanigan comes back to school. But let's face it, Caleb Swanigan needs to get his body in better condition. Caleb Swanigan can't guard NBA fours right now, which is a position he would be asked to play. It makes total sense for Caleb Swanigan to come back to school. That doesn't mean that's the route he's going to take. We go to another Big Ten team right now. Maryland fans are waiting with bated breath to find out what Melo Trimble is going to do. Look, Melo Trimble should come back to school, should have put up big numbers as the alpha dog in College Park, but the ancillary pieces around Trimble are not nearly as good as they were in the first 2 years. There's no Layman, okay? There's no Des Wells. There's no Robert Carter. There's no Diamond Stone. There's no Rashid Suleiman. Melo Trimble should come back to school, but he also has to remember that the Maryland team he's going to come back to play with will probably be worse than the last two we've seen in College Park. If the Terps don't have Melo Trimble back, I do not believe Maryland will play in the NCAA tournament, and they may not play with him in the NCAA tournament if he does come back. And the sleeper right now, I think, team that nobody's talking about in terms of waiting on guys to make a decision, Clemson. Clemson won 10 ACC games last year without a true home court advantage. They are going to be in a situation where they're going to add three transfers next year: Marquise Reed, Shelton Mitchell, and Eli Thomas, and they're waiting on Jerron Blossom game. Now, Jerron Blossom game, high-level athlete, made 44% of his three-point shots last year, could move up in workouts, but to me, this is a guy who has the ability to play his way into the second round. But if he comes back, he will be a top 20 pick in 2017. And the thing you have to remember, more exposure is going to help you get the type of contract you want coming out of the gate. Buddy Hield proved that by having the type of year he had for Oklahoma. And I'm not comparing Jerron Blossom game to Buddy Hield by any stretch of the imagination. But with that said, Jerron Blossom game comes back to Clemson, Clemson can finish in the top five of the ACC. We'd like to thank ESPN's Fran Fraschilla for joining us. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.